welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Turn the Page. I'm your host today, Jen, and I am joined by a researcher and a writer who has done a lot of fascinating work on pop culture history and all sorts of things. So let's get into it. Hello, welcome to the show. Could I ask you to introduce yourself and your book, please?
Yes. My name is A. Ashley Hoff. My book is With Love, Mommy Dearest, The Making of an Unintentional Camp Classic. And it is basically a book about the crafting of the classic and somewhat infamous 1981 motion picture, Mommy Dearest, starring Faye Dunaway. And it was conceived as a drama, and it was received as more of a, shall we say, melodrama.
Mm. Yeah, the disconnect between the filmmaker's intent and the way it was received is absolutely fascinating. Could you talk about a little bit, is that what drew you to the story? Like when you choose an entertainment history project, what is it that you find usually draws you to a subject?
Well, really, honestly, I mean, as far as overall writing of subjects, it's the movies or the pop culture references that interest me. I had written an earlier book on the popular 70s TV game show Match Game. And so, you know, As it turns out, I happened to meet somebody who was connected with the show and basically told her, you should write a book about your years working on it because I would gladly read it. And she basically said she didn't want to write such a book, but she'd gladly talk to me for it. And so that started me on the journey for writing Match Game 101, A Backstage History of Match Game. With this current book, new book coming out May 7th, With Love, Mommy Dearest, I had met Christina Crawford years ago at an event, and we ended up chatting. Obviously, I knew by reputation she was not thrilled with the way the movie had turned out, but we ended up in a conversation discussing the fact that even though she did not care for the movie, she recognized the fact that both its popularity as well as her initial memoir, Mommy Dearest, had helped bring the subjects of child abuse and how to survive it, how to overcome it, into the mainstream conversation. At the time that her original book was published in 1978, there really was no major distinction made between quote-unquote disciplining your child and really bullying or taking, you know, the day-to-day aspects of your day out on your child. I think over the decades, we have become a little bit more aware of such treatment and figured out ways to prevent it. But at that time, it just wasn't talked about. And so I was always conscious of the fact that the film, even though it had the reputation as being this camp classic that everybody laughed at, I knew early on, yeah, that's kind of creepy. Let's look at the serious stuff as well as, let's face it, you look at the movie, there are definitely elements that are, shall we say, over the top. Mm-hmm. I wrote the book with a respectful tone, but at the same time, I'm not ignoring the fact that this movie is a camp classic, and I explain why and why it turned out that way.
Yeah, the section early on that talks about the reception of the book was really interesting to me. It was so divisive at the time. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about the nature of that reception. And does it seem sort of like an important moment to you in the development of like celebrity culture? Or, you know, because Joan was such a powerful figure, and I think because she was so famous, made the reception so divisive. Do you think it changed the way that we relate to celebrities and their sort of off-screen lives?
That's a very good question. A lot of people always refer to Christina Crawford's memoir, Mommy Dearest, when it came out, as being, quote-unquote, the first of the tell-all Hollywood memoirs. It really wasn't. I think one or two years earlier, Brooke Hayward had come out with her memoir, Haywire, which was about living with her father, who was Leland Hayward, famous Hollywood agent and producer, and actress Margaret Sullavan, as well as her stepmother, Pamela Harriman. And that had kind of shattered the expose. The Hollywood lifestyle is not always perfect. But there were a few others, but it was, let's just say, Mommy Dearest was the most notorious of them. The book had come out in 1978, just 1 year after Joan Crawford had passed away. So the book, and then the film was made just a few years later, released in 1981. So this was all still fresh in people's minds, people who were great fans of Joan Crawford ever since her golden age highlight, you know, high times. People remembered her very fondly. She was very good with her fans. She was a total pro, even her detractors, such as co-star Bette Davis, famously said she was a total pro. She was there on the set, there on time, knew her lines. People really did respect her in a lot of ways. There were a lot of people who had worked with her who did not necessarily get along with her. And they are some of the people that I quote in the book, talking about things that they witnessed or things that they had heard at the time regarding these allegations of child abuse. There's a lot of people find it very difficult to wrap their minds around the idea that someone that is really a wonderful person, a very talented person, a great artist, can also have perhaps a darker side that, you know, is reserved for either behind closed doors or for particular individuals with whom they either work or are living with. So I think Mommy Dearest really took a lot of hits at the time just because Joan Crawford was still so fondly remembered by fans and so staunchly defended by her coworkers who were still alive and did not wish to see one of their rank, you know, image tarnished. Faye Dunaway ended up starring in the film. She was an A-list star of that era, the 70s. She had, for anybody who is not familiar with her, her really breakout role came out in 1967 with Bonnie and Clyde, which was an immediate immense hit and put her in the top tier of stars of that era throughout the American new wave of filmmaking that happened in the late 60s throughout the 70s and arguably ended with Mommy Dearest in 1981. She had done a string of successful films that were critically acclaimed, Chinatown being probably the top among them, Network in 1976, for which she won the Oscar as Best Actress. And when Mommy Dearest was produced and released in 1981, she had just turned 40 years old, not a, you know, kind of a precarious time for any actress. Mm-hmm. That summer, 1981, also saw the release of Steven Spielberg's Raiders of the Lost Ark. The following year, Spielberg's E.T., and the rest of the 80s was really kind of dominated by either comedies or Cineplex blockbusters laden with special effects, Ghostbusters and all the Spielberg films. And there were not quite the same level of character-driven dramas that Faye Dunaway had specialized in following throughout the 80s and the 90s. It was a transition in Hollywood movie making, and it was a transition from really the golden age of Hollywood filmmaking, because so many of those stars of that era, such as Joan Crawford, who passed in 77, so many of her contemporaries were passing throughout the 80s and into the early 90s. Greta Garbo in 1990, Bette Davis, I think, also in 89 or 90, Cary Grant around the same time. And so it was a changing of the guard in Hollywood, which we're really kind of left with today, and films that Faye Dunaway specialized in, and especially the lavish studio films that Mommy Dearest was really the last of, with these gorgeous sets, with marble halls and period trappings and lavish costumes. Nowadays, they would just green screen all that in. I mean, a lot of the historical dramas and period dramas we've got today are really done with CGI, or at least a lot of it. You know, a lot of the blanks are filled in that way. In 1981, they did not have those special effects at hand. And when you went on the set of Mommy Dearest and looked at that gorgeous Art Deco house that the character of Joan Crawford is portrayed in this film lives in, I mean, that was a gorgeous palace. It was a gorgeous ice palace, lavishly produced. So everybody who worked on this movie expected it to be nominated for a raft of awards, you know. And to everyone's shock and amazement, when the movie was released, it garnered a reputation as an unintentional comedy. And even though critics derided it for being, you know, over the top, melodramatic, it was never a flop. I mean, critically, I suppose, but commercially, it was always a big hit and remains so to this day. Four decades on, I can go into any retail outlet selling DVDs and Blu-rays. The chances are pretty good that they've got Mommy Dearest on the shelves. Doesn't have to be special ordered. And that really says something about our preconceived notions of what defines success or failure. And someone like Faye Dunaway, who starred in the film and who was so really kind of trashed by the critics, which I feel bad for, because she really gave a powerhouse performance. Ironically enough, even the people who regard this film as a quote-unquote camp classic or an unintentional comedy, everybody raves about her performance. She gave a powerhouse performance. Is she, in fact, chewing scenery? Yes, she is. Is she giving an over-the-top performance? Absolutely. And you know what? That's what the part called for, ironically enough. Director Frank Perry, who had actually been known for doing a lot of smaller, both smaller budget and smaller, really character-driven indie movies, he had a theater background before moving into directing indie movies, and he was very accomplished as a director, both in theater and the independent film movement of the 60s into the 70s. He basically saw this story as this larger-than-life operatic motion picture, and he wanted Faye to be big. He kept directing her, "You're Medea, be Medea." And she was. And she has been criticized for it ever since, which is one reason that she does not like talking about the film and wishes to distance herself from it even today. And I totally understand why. She felt very personally hurt by the way the film was received and by the criticisms leveled against her. Again, everybody's saying that she was overacting. Well, she was directed that way. And overacting or not, she gave a powerhouse performance that, again, is 43 years later still lauded as this amazing performance. Has every drag queen she ever met, you know, copied her? Absolutely. And why wouldn't they want to? Because she was this powerhouse sorceress. She was Medea on screen. And it's a wonder to behold. We should all have that much caffeine in the morning to, you know, give this much energy.
Absolutely. Yeah, it seems to me, you know, that the way that it was received as comedy or unintentional comedy really seems to be a misunderstanding of a lot what the performance is also going for, because when I encountered it as an adult, I think there are horror elements in it as well, you know. It plays to frighten you as well with her anger and her threats of violence. And I think that maybe it's just, is that because, like, the story was too ahead of its time? was the audience not ready for the message? You know, I feel like there is a disconnect between, how it was received.
Yeah. Well, for those who are not aware, when the movie was originally supposed to be made, before the cameras started rolling, Anne Bancroft had been initially attached to play Joan Crawford in the movie. And her husband, Mel Brooks, the famous director, had told her basically, you know, it's one thing to read in the book how Joan Crawford, you know, tore down her rose garden. It's another thing to see it on screen. And he just felt very strongly that the audience is just going to sit there laughing, because it's one thing to read it, you know, imagine it in your mind. But when you actually see it played out on screen, the audience becomes uncomfortable. And it may be a very American thing that whenever it comes to squeamish feelings kind of things, American audiences in particular tend to laugh. It may be nervous laughter, but it comes out as laughter. And Anne Bancroft had dropped out of the movie shortly thereafter, and Faye Dunaway had jumped into the role. Faye Dunaway, I do not think, had Mel Brooks advising her on comedy. And as a result, yeah, that kind of makes sense why audiences who were watching this movie on the big screen in theaters, it really is a violent movie. The haircutting scene, the wire hangers scene, the cleaning the bathroom scene. These really are very terrifying moments. And I remember when I was very young seeing the movie on television. First time I saw it was on cable, cut to ribbons with commercial interruptions. And all the campy scenes, quote unquote, campy moments, had been removed in favor of the commercials. So what I was watching looked to me like a horror film. Mm-hmm. I knew of the film's reputation that it was supposed to be funny, ha ha, but what I was watching was actually pretty bloody scary. And I think audiences at that time were not entirely ready for something so violent. You know, Mara Hobel was about 9 years old when she made this movie, and I had interviewed her extensively about the making. She said that Faye Dunaway was very kind to her and explained to her thoroughly, okay, in this scene, I'm going to do this. I'm going to pull your arm here, and we're going to do this. And you took great pains to make sure that Mara was comfortable with the proceedings, but at the same time that Mara, as a young actress, a professional actress, was able to register the fear or the, you know, whatever the scene called for. But when you watch it put together on film, I mean, it really is pretty terrifying. It really is pretty scary in the middle of all these kind of unintentionally hilarious moments, particular shots or particular moments. So it's an odd blend kind of movie. I have talked with a lot of people who watched the film, some of them who've watched it 100 times. And for some of those people, they regard it as over-the-top comedy, which I guess is fine. That's the way you view it. Good for you. Other people I know watched it as a very specifically therapeutic / cathartic exercise, and those were people a lot of times who had themselves experienced some sort of bullying or abusive situation in their youth. And obviously the film performs a particular service for them psychologically as well. So I'm not going to knock anybody who views the film however they view it. If they want to see the camp, that's fine. My book was written in a sympathetic tone, but I'm not blind. I talk about the camp. I don't judge it, nor for that matter do I judge, you know, the subject of child abuse is a very delicate subject. And Frank Yablons, who produced the film, and a number of people connected with it, Frank Perry, who directed it, had themselves experienced abuse. Despite the fact that Frank Yablons in particular had, whenever he was talking, among his colleagues. He talked about the film in very crass terms, you know, a movie he could exploit and make a buck off of, that kind of thing. But he really did separately try to make a quote-unquote message picture. He wanted it to be, you know, a big lavish period drama. He wanted it to have the Hollywood ballyhoo. He wanted, you know, an A-list star like Faye Dunaway to star in it. But at the same time, he really did hope that people came away with some sort of sensitivity toward the subject of child abuse and those who are, you know, recovering from it. And so it's interesting that the film that was made kind of with mixed messages or coming from mixed directions was received in such mixed ways. I think Michael Musto was the one who had pointed out that the same year that Faye Dunaway won a particular award for her performance in this, she also won the Razzie as quote-unquote worst actress. And the picture, you know, received quote-unquote a raft of Razzies. It's kind of an interesting thing. Justin Bozung, who was Frank Perry's official biographer, has a book coming out on Frank Perry, I think later this year. Mm-hmm. He had pointed out that Norman Mailer had once said that great art is something that evenly divides its audience so that it stimulates a discussion over its either merits or flaws. And he said that anything that was 100% great or 100% bad is just bad art because it does not stimulate any kind of discussion, debate, or really analysis. Everybody seems to be on the same page, so therefore it is quote-unquote boring art. And I think that's kind of an interesting way to look at it. If that's the judgment, Mommy Dearest should have won a raft of Oscars as well, because it has evenly divided audiences for 40-odd years at this point.
Yeah, you know, and I imagine that that reception must have felt so invalidating for Christina, you know, immediately, and the speed with which the marketing, you know, leaned into that camp reception must have also felt like a betrayal. But despite that, the movie has had a lot of impact on the discourse about child abuse. And I think now we see a lot more material dealing with it and a lot less pushback of the kind that Christina received for telling her story at the time. So, you know, in addition to the impact on cinema and the careers of all these people, it's had a really lasting effect also on, I think, a really overlooked topic for a long time in this country.
Oh, yes. Well, and it is to Christina Crawford's credit that this subject has become mainstream. In the four decades since her book was first published and the movie has been released, there have been more laws instituted governing child protection. There have been a lot of legal precedents set in legal cases over that time. And a lot of that is because her book really brought that subject into the mainstream conversation. You know, poor Christina has really felt like the movie, you know, made the subject into a joke, not just her personally, but because she'd already, let's face it, she'd already dealt with abuse one way or another throughout her life and career. Mm-hmm. But she felt that it trivialized the subject. I had exchanged emails with her while I was writing this book. I don't quote her in the book, but she had essentially just simply registered her continued disappointment that the filmmakers lost an opportunity to make a really groundbreaking movie that would have seriously looked at this very tenuous relationship between a mother and a child. And instead, you know, it turned out to be what so many people called camp melodrama. She just felt that it was a missed opportunity. And that is something that, you know, aside from being personally made the butt of a lot of jokes, which is another thing that Faye Dunaway has felt, You know, she just felt that it trivialized a very serious topic that she took very seriously. And Faye Dunaway, it's the same thing. She felt personally hurt. She was a method trained actress who put her all into this role over several months. And she was shocked when she went to Grauman's Chinese Theater. She did not see the initial screenings. She went to see it once it was released and went to go see it with everybody else and was shocked when audiences started laughing. And she was just completely shell-shocked by the experience. And again, I think anybody could understand that when you put your all into any job, to have it made an object of ridicule, that hurts. And I get why she personally feels very pained by the subject. Nonetheless, despite the fact that Faye has only under duress really talked about the film over the years, I was able to track down a lot of people who'd never spoken about the experience before, who had worked on the production end, the crew end, some of the actors and actresses who played smaller roles, in addition to people who played larger roles, such as, you know, Mara Hobel. And I was able to get a lot of stories and a lot of corroboration as far as what actually happened on the set and why the movie really turned out to be made the way it was.
Yeah, the array of sources, the interviews with people involved in production, and also cultural commentators like Michael Musto, who you mentioned before, and Bruce Valange, who writes your foreword. It tells a very complicated, sensitive, vulnerable story with a lot of nuance. It's really, really wonderful. And thank you for coming to talk to me about it and sharing it with our listeners.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your interest, and thank you for talking about the book. I greatly appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Listeners, it's now your turn. Please check out With Love, Mommy Dearest. This book is absolutely fascinating, and it's written with a lot of sensitivity and fascinating facts. You're going to learn about the making of this movie and the legacy it has. Thank you so much for joining us, listeners. It is now time to close this chapter.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.